Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Unfortunately, last week, due to my error, we kind of missed out on the Iceman, Mr. Scully, but we do have him here tonight. Iceman, how are we doing this evening, my man?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Ready to go.
I hear you. I've seen a couple more of the knockout series there on Nouveau. We've had some fights down there in Florida, so we've got a lot to talk about. Let's start out with your knockout series here. John, how's everything going? What's the progress?
We're looking good. I mean, we've got the second-to-last episode will air Wednesday at 10 on Nouveau, and then we have the finale this Sunday with Roy Jones in the main event. So I'm actually in Connecticut right now, just finishing up training Mike Oliver for his appearance on the show. So everything's looking good. I mean, I've been in touch with all the people on the show, and everybody's getting hyped up as we get closer.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Always glad to hear about that. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the things that were happening down in your neck of the woods there. We've seen Danny Jacobs' performance in, the other night. I know it wasn't quite the ending that we thought about, but first of all, John, can you kind of explain to us, layman, exactly what happened to Moore's leg?
I mean, to be completely honest with you, I was out, we were actually training late, and I didn't even catch the fight. But I was reading about it, and now tell me from your view exactly what happened, and I'll feed off of that.
Well, what it kind of looked like is when Jacobs hit him, he fell down. And Jacobs' momentum carried him forward into Moore. Now,
right.
you can't really tell. I mean, it kind of looks like, you know, Jacobs may have stepped on, you know, the lower end of that muscle. You know, but you could
right.
you could tell by the twist of the leg that it was something that was abnormal had happened.
Right.
It was TV. We couldn't hear the snap, but you could tell it was just an awkward angle. You know?
Right. I mean, the thing is, I'm from what I've heard, like the way he went down. I mean, he was injured anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Danny necessarily caused the injury. Now, in other words, if Danny, what did you think? If he just went down and Danny never had that forward momentum, he still twisted his leg up. Am I correct? Right. So, I mean,
right.
I think the injury happened. I don't think Danny compounded it or anything like that. That's been my impression. From what I've read from people who seem to know what they're talking about. But again, I didn't see it 100% to really say for sure.
Now, you know, there have been some discussions about, you know, Danny's remarks afterwards, you know, about, you know, not going backwards and whatnot. But I can totally see, you know, where they're justified. As far as that respect is concerned, but with Danny not you know saying that he's not going to get a rematch, what do you think is Moore's future?
You know, my thing is, I mean, it's so soon after the fight, and you've seen it quite a bit. You know, even I can remember when Chad fought Hopkins the first time, and they had that bizarre ending, and Hopkins fell down and got his shoulder injured, and instantly after the fight, Chad was adamant, like, I'm not giving him a rematch. We don't need it. No, we're going to win. Basically the same thing. We're going to move on. We're going to go forward. But the fact is, you know, after time settled, the rematch would make sense. And as a fighter, I've always been the type, and I kind of assumed everybody was like this, but I've always been the type, if there was any kind of controversy and the guy wanted a rematch, then we should have a rematch. Like, I would prefer a definitive ending. You know, when you fight someone, deep down, all money and business aside, I mean, I think a real fighter wants to know if he can beat that person and if he could beat him legitimately. So I'm thinking maybe Danny was talking as a businessman, you know, and as a champion, you know, trying to navigate his way through the division. But, you know, I think it's interesting, and if they market it right, you know, they can get people even more interested in it, you know, because I think it was obviously shaping up to be a very good fight. Both guys were on the floor, and you don't see that very often so soon in a fight, so early.
Oh, most definitely. You know, it was a good fight. You know, I think, you know, you could see, you know, Danny kind of taking control, you know. I don't want to say definitively, you know, that you know, I mean, it was that more looked like, you know, a shot fight or anything like that, you know, but certainly, you know, that first the knockdown, the first round, I mean, you know, you could definitely kind of term that, you know, right now in terms of action, you could definitely say that would be a candidate for possibly, you know, a round of the year, both fighters going down. But, you know, I do think that possibly, you know, as a boxing fan, you do, you know, you might want to see a rematch here, or like you say, you know, have a very definitive ending to the match. But now, a match that, you know, everyone that I'm talking about, and I'm excited about it, John, and I'm sure you as a fighter are excited about it, this potential matchup between Triple G and David Lemieux. John, what's your thoughts on that fight?
You know, I'm interested just because, you know, for two reasons. One, for the same reason everybody else is that you have two proven punchers, and you know, I think people want to see what's going to happen when Triple G gets blasted on the button by a guy like David. David, obviously, you know, is a titanic puncher. He's got that going for him. On a personal note, I've known David since he was about 13. I used to go up and spar with Otis Grant in Montreal very frequently, and David was a young kid at the time. So I have a long history with him, and you know, I knew him when he was young and just a funny little kid, and we still joke around and everything. So you know, I've kind of seen him grow up in boxing, so I'm obviously interested on that level. But you know, he's such a big puncher. I mean, he's a big giant puncher, and he's a cocky kid. You know, I like that about him. And he's it's going to be a great fight. It's going to be a great, you know, it's the first time I think Triple G has been in a situation where people really want to know if he's going to take this particular guy's punch.
Yeah, I mean, that more than anything else is definitely, you know, we all want to see what's going to happen when Triple G gets hit by a legitimate puncher. So I think for everybody, you know, that's going to be one of the fights to watch. Now, going back, I mean, you know, to another guy that we all know and love, and you know, we have all touted as an announcer and part of the ring crew. Let's talk a little bit about Danny and Paulie. Two different paths here, one on the way up, one on the way out. What do you see happening for Danny? As I mean, I know this was his first bout out as a welterweight. What did you see in Danny as far as this weight class is concerned?
I mean, I think he looked basically the same as he's always looked. You know, he looked good, and he's strong and everything. And he's, you know, even 3-4 fights ago, I felt like he was going to be at the point where he was going to be at 147 and just in that mix with Thurman and these different guys in the class. You know, it's a very deep class. You know, it's almost, I almost get the impression like if these guys all mixed in together and had a round robin, they would all lose at some point. You know, there's no Floyd in there other than Floyd. There's no one who I would just say, yeah, he could beat everybody else. I think just all the different guys. I can't even name them all. There's so many guys in there. Sean Porter, who I really like. So, you know, I can't say that any one of them is going to be dominant because, you know, it's such a deep class. And, you know, once Floyd is fully retired, I think it's going to open the doors for a lot of very good fights. I think boxing will actually, from the fans' perspective, I think boxing will actually be better off, Tyrus.
Yeah, there has actually been a lot of people say that. And I can understand, you know, especially, you know, with them giving up the belts, you know, not that we hold a lot of, you know, a lot of sanctions in the belts. But the thing of it is, you know, hey, like you said, boxing might be better off. We have a lot of young and up-and-comers that are going to be fighting for titles and are going to be getting, you know, their chance. Now, John, you know, speaking of getting a fair chance now, you know, everybody, you know, we have a lot of people outside of the boxing fans, you know, talking, you know, a lot of smack about this PBC series. But, you know, we see here now Fox is definitely on board. They signed up for a multi-year deal. They're going to extend their coverage past September 8th. John, do we still see PBC as a great tool for boxing? And should, you know, we kind of, you know, like take all this negativity with, you know, a grain of salt that's been put out about the series?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what the problem is so far. I mean, it's not like they've had 100 shows. I mean, it's still a relatively new series. And I think the show has been good. I think the fights have been good. You know, I don't know what people want. I don't know what what they're looking for. You know, they're looking for like miracles overnight for everything to be perfect. But the guy, you know, Al Haymon's doing his best. It appears to me he's trying to go in the right direction for the boxing fans. I mean, I really think so. And I think it's a good thing. It's a great show. People are talking about it. I mean, other than Mayweather-Pacquiao, that's the only thing that people have been talking about in the last 6 months. So anything that gets people talking is okay by me.
yes, it is. Now, let's talk a little bit about the two fights we have coming up on the 28th. Now, John, one of the criticisms for the PBC series, especially as far as this fight is concerned, Shane Mosley, is that he's got a pay-per-view coming up the same night as Luis Santa Cruz and Abner Mares are fighting for free. John,
all right.
From a financial point of view now, you know, I mean, we both know, I mean, you know, I really don't even see why this fight was made. I mean, this is a Twitter matchup, you know, between two guys that are close to 40 years old. I really don't see, you know, people turning their free TV off to buy Shane Mosley Mayorga. Well, your thoughts on that?
I think, one thing, I mean, Shane has got to be. I mean, Shane, my last year in the Golden Gloves, I was 20 years old, and Shane was there. So Shane had to be at least 16. So if that's true, I mean my calculation, Shane's got to be 44 right now, 43 or 44, 43 at the youngest. So, you know, he's up there. He's had a lot of tough fights. I mean, I think, you know, I as a boxing fan, you know, I consider Shane a friend, you know, especially since we're on the show together and we've connected, and there's obviously that interest in Mayorga just because he's such a nut and he's, you know, he's charismatic or whatever the word is. You know, I think you're going against, people are going to look at it like history. You know, the history of boxing, you know, you got these two guys, you know their names. And, you know, it's just like if Holyfield was to come back now and fight someone, people would tune in and watch just because it's Holyfield and just because it's him. So I think Shane and Mayorga have a certain audience, but to go against two young guys, you know, on a free TV show, you know, and you're having to pay for those guys, I don't think the hardcore, you know, true boxing fans are going to watch Shane's fight. I mean, that's my gut feeling. I mean, I wouldn't pay for it just because, you know, for the obvious reasons that I think everyone that knows boxing already know.
Yeah, now let's talk about this other pay-per-view that they're trying to force-feed us here. John, Floyd Mayweather and Andre Berto, really?
Like I say, I've been saying all along, I told you the other week, you know, I just feel like they really screwed up by not making Pacquiao the last fight. Like that was, after making us wait so long, I thought that was the plan all along. I said, it must be a ploy. They just must be saving it for last to really go out with a bang. And to go out, you know, that would be like having a game after the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? You have the Super Bowl and then you have the Super Bowl champs play another game against some guys the following week. You know, it just the letdown of it is you know, hard to overcome. I don't think, I mean, trying to pay, I think here's the mistake. Here's what I think happened. I think Floyd and his people are seriously overestimating him, his worth in terms of pay-per-view. I think Floyd is a big pay-per-view draw, but he's got to fight another pay-per-view draw to make it big. I don't think, you know, and no disrespect to Berto, but I'm saying at this point in his career, I think they said they're charging $75. I'll tell you right now, no hardcore boxing fan is paying $75 to watch that fight. It's the people who are on the bandwagon now. Floyd, like when I was at the Pacquiao fight and we were in the street on the strip, after the fight, you had all these people yelling, money team, money team. And the one thing that really stuck with me the whole time, like 100 people, just money team, and they had the money team shirts. And I'm like, these people don't even know what that is. Like, they just heard about Floyd Mayweather like last year. And they just jumped on the bandwagon. They're here for the event. They're not here for the boxing because they don't know boxing. They just know the money team. And they don't even know what the money team is. They don't know really anything about Floyd other than that he's Floyd Mayweather. After he retires, they won't follow boxing anymore. And those are the people I think that they're going to have to rely on paying $75 because nobody like me is going to pay $75 for that fight.
Well, you know, here's the thing, that the last fight, well, you know, even though it wasn't a fight, it was an event.
Right.
This is not even an event.
Right.
As
well, that's
what
I think.
Fact,
I think Floyd sees himself as an event. I think he sees himself as a Tyson, a De La Hoya, a Sugar Ray Leonard. Like every time Sugar Ray Leonard fought, it was the Sugar Ray Leonard show. It was the world was stopping to check this thing out. Ali, you know, De La Hoya, I don't think Floyd is at that level. As crazy as it sounds, he just made $100-something million for one fight. He's all over the papers. He's all over the magazines. He's all over the internet. But I still don't think he's at that level with the masses. I don't see him in that light. And I think after he retires, I don't think boxing, you know, sometimes like you hear people say, oh, boxing will never be the same after this guy retires, or baseball will never be the same after this guy retires. And I don't think boxing is going to skip a beat after Floyd retires.
No, Floyd is a guy, you know, like you said, a lot of people, you know, that don't know boxing follow, you know, they may follow Floyd, but, you know, I'm kind of with you on this one here. You know, I just don't see it. And no, you know, no disrespect to, you know, the undercard, but I think this undercard kind of even, you know, underlines exactly what you're saying, because this is not the most spectacular undercard for Floyd to be going out. I mean, this is an undercard that, if anything else, it ensures that Floyd is the star of the show.
Right, and I think my gut feeling is that it's going to be a disappointment. They may never admit it, but I think, I mean, on the one hand, it'll be a disappointment, but at this point, he could fight the fight for free, and it won't matter to him. Like, the money he has, he will never see. He will never touch. He could put half of it away in a room somewhere, and he'll never have to unlock the door. Like, he's never going to see this money. He shouldn't. You know, any right-thinking, you know, intelligent person should never have to use that money. You know, hopefully he doesn't, you know, blow it. I hope that, I mean, for lack of a better term, I hope he doesn't blow it. I hope he keeps it. But, you know, he's obviously not fighting for money anymore. He bypassed that thing quite a while ago. So, you know, it is what it is. But I just don't see this as the event that I think Floyd is overestimating his overall appeal.
Yeah, I don't know whether he's overestimating himself or maybe underestimating, you know, how much people really care about the sport and realize that, you know, I mean, he is really not the end all see all of boxing. John, some other interesting notes. And this one kind of makes my heart a little heavy. James Toney lost last night. The journeyman Charles Ellis in St. Louis. Tony's 46 years old. He really doesn't have anything else to prove as far as the sport is concerned. John, is it really that hard for you know, the veteran guys to hang him up?
You know, I don't know what it is. I guess that's what it is. I mean, it's not the money, because they're not making nearly what they made, in their primes. I know that boxing is a sport, you know, I know it's better than anyone, you know, and that's why I still spar. You know, I just sparred 5 rounds with a 24-year-old yesterday, and I do it for free because I love it. I love to box. I love to do it. And so I understand that, but you know, a guy like James, I mean, people forget. And you know, like the current thing, like if you really think about it, his last performance really was when he beat probably Holyfield, when he stopped Holyfield, which must have been 11 years ago. You know, that's a long time. Like guys that are 21 now in the game, adults, they don't even remember 11 fights 11 years ago. So they weren't around for that. So certainly people, you know, they weren't around for it. They don't remember it. And they certainly don't remember when he beat Michael Nunn and Reggie Johnson and Iron Barkley and all those great fighters. So, you know, he's just kind of killing himself. He's kind of like when Camacho, at the end of his career, literally 15 years past the days when Camacho was a little Superman, and people say, oh, Camacho's okay, and I'm like, no, man, no, it's unbelievable, it's just you don't know him, you've never seen that Camacho, you've seen the guy that's fighting De La Hoya 15 years past his best days, you know, but, and now, you know, losing the guys, and I'm not disrespecting Charles Ellis at all, but, you know, I never even really heard of Charles Ellis before last night, and you'd have to think that 10 years ago, Charles Ellis wouldn't even be able to fight James in a real fight. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, this one's pretty clear cut. what's happening here. And, you know, I just wish James would see the light right now.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes it is cool, you know, watching, you know, our veterans, guys that we remember in their prime still trying, you know, to fight some of these young and up-and-comers. And like you said, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have never even attempted to put James Toney in the same ring with this gentleman. But, you know, right now it is what it is. John, we know who Floyd is fighting, you know, and but you talked a little bit about the Pacquiao. Now, you know, my thing was I thought that his last two fight would be with Pacquiao. He'd have the fight, and then they'd have the rematch.
Right.
Now, but I didn't really want to see him fight, you know, one of the young guns, like, you know, Keith Thurman or one of those guys. And not so much because I was worried about Floyd, but worried about, you know, what would happen to a young fighter if they got beat by Floyd, more or less. Now, I guess, who do you see right now as the logical successor to Floyd? I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying Keith, but does Keith have enough star power to be the next Floyd Mayweather? Let's put it like that.
I mean, I don't think any of them yet where, you know, they have that what you'd call star power. You know, they're going to have to build it up. Just like anybody else. You know, it took Floyd. I mean, Floyd, you know, in the last few years, the last couple of years anyway, it's been Floyd, 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 everything Floyd, Floyd, money team, money team, money team. But it took Floyd a long time to reach this point. People have to realize this guy's been a pro 19 years. I mean, the Olympics were 19 years ago, right? 19 years ago. That's a long time. That is a long, long time. Muhammad Ali, I mean, 19 years after the Olympics, Muhammad Ali was retired. He had just got done beating Leon Spinks in the rematch, and he was in retirement. So Floyd took a long time. It was no overnight success by any means. And Floyd fought a lot of years there, not making, you know, the money that he makes now. So these guys are going to have to really, really capture the attention of the people. And, you know, there's good names. I mean, fighting each other might be one way to do it. You know, if you ever had a tournament, I mean, and I wish somebody had the guts, and I mean the management, if they could have this and say, you know what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take Garcia. Now, let me see if I can think of eight guys. But Garcia, Thurman, Porter, and five other guys. You know, whoever we want to put in there, Lamont Peterson or Amir Khan has got to be in there. You take these eight guys, you have four fights, and then the four winners fight each other, and then the two winners fight each other, and the winner is the undisputed champion. And then from there, he goes and defends the title against whoever. That, to me, would be a really special way of getting a successor to Floyd. I don't think they'll do that. What they'll do is they'll get three guys in you know, the three different or the four different sanctioning bodies, and we're going to end up with four champions. You know, I wish for the first time in history the four sanctioning bodies would come together and go, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to all put it together, and we're going to have an undisputed champion. And let's see if we can get that going. But that's wishful thinking. So they're going to have to earn their way. There is going to be no successor right away. People aren't just going to go, okay, you're the next guy. We'll accept you now. They're going to have to earn their way the same way Floyd did.
Most definitely. And you know, it should be very exciting. I am excited to see, you know, if this Berto fight is really going to be Floyd's farewell, or is, you know, is this going to be another one of those publicity things where, well, the fans weren't satisfied, so I decided to come out and give him one more fight. And, oh, by the way, you know, let's see if we can beat Rocky's record. Maybe I'll take two more fights. I'm just looking all for right. some kind of publicity quirk or something here. This it just doesn't smell right for Berto to beat Floyd's last fight, you know. But John, before I let you go, we do have a fight coming up this Friday. I want you your thoughts on Antonio Tarver and Steve Cunningham. Before you leave, give us your final thoughts on that fight. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media. And any other final thoughts you might want to give the fans tonight?
This Wednesday is the last episode before the live finale of our show, Knockout. So Wednesday on Nuvo, you got to watch it. If you have not seen the previous episodes, you go to www.mynuvotv.com, and you can watch the previous episodes and the trailers, and you can check things out. And as far as Tarver and Steve, I think it's a very good fight. I like guys. They both bring a lot to the table at this point in their careers. And I'm interested to see how they react to each other. You know, Tarver's got a lot of tricks, and he's got very underrated power, I think, for his size. And Steve has got that range, and Steve is a real gritty guy. He's able to overcome a lot of guys' strengths just with his grittiness. So that's going to be an interesting fight. We're going to see if Tarver can. I think Tarver's going to really have to outsmart Steve to beat him. I'm interested in seeing the fight. And as far as I go, you look for me on Facebook, JohnTheIcemanScully.com. JohnTheIcemanScully. The Iceman is one word, and that's where you find me on Facebook. Iceman John Scully on Twitter, Iceman John Scully on Instagram. And, you know, as always, a lot of boxing talk, literally 7 days a week. We talk about boxing. We mix a couple. Sometimes I throw some politics and gun control, stuff like that, just to keep it interesting. Even though I don't know anything about those things, I just throw it out there to let other people talk about it.
All right, yeah. Ice. Well, as usual, my man, always good talking with you, and look forward to having you on again next week, my man. You have a great
All right, buddy. Thank you very much. All right.
All right. That was the Iceman, John Scully. Good to have him on the show every week. Appreciate his time. But right now, everyone, we are being honored to have the brand new manager of Prom Gym, world
My
champion
manager.
Himself.
Coach.
Excuse me?
Coach.
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 Okay, Coach. All right, Coach. By the way, we are introducing you to everyone, Mr. Milt McCoy, the head coach of Prom Gym. Milt, how are you doing tonight, my man?
I'm doing fine, Dan.
Great. Hey, man, there's so much to talk about. I mean, you have such a historic career. And you have a history with one of the most prominent figures in boxing, the godfather of boxing himself, Mr. Emanuel Stewart. Can you kind of, you know, just tell us what it was like growing up in the sport under the godfather?
Emanuel had, as I get older, I look back on it, but he had a lot of good tricks. I mean, he had a lot of veteran moves. This is what I'm trying to teach to my kids now is all the tricks, the mind games, and all that in boxing. That's what I'm trying to teach to these young kids now.
You know, whenever you talk to him, or even you didn't even have to talk to him, you could just sit around and listen to his stories. And you know, you learned so much. Milt, I know, you know, now you had a very good amateur career. Now, we see a lot of guys now that go in without any amateur career. Some of them be successful and whatnot, but
but the odds is not falling like back in the day. When fighters back in our era with 100 some amateur fights, that played a big role. That means they know how to fight. In this decade now, these guys are getting like 3 or 4 amateur fights, and they turn these guys pros. I think they're rushing him too soon.
You bring up a good point there, and I've asked, you know, and Scully's brought up this point also. You know, a guy, you know, has 10 or 12 amateur fights, maybe 20, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a lot of people offering money and whatnot. I mean, you know, it has to be not only a distraction, but do you, I'm trying to figure out exactly how, do you really put a boxer at risk when he doesn't have that proper foundation?
I think kind of so, you know, I don't want to throw a name, but different guys, Quante Paulo was a champion, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a champion, but they got to go through the, you know, the amateur program. I believe, like Willie Mayo always preached, I believe in the amateurs. I do believe in amateurs because I was a good amateur fighter before I turned professional. Even though I didn't win the big prestige titles other than winning the Amateur World Championship, I didn't win no national bad decisions, but I believe in amateurs. You got to learn how to fight first. You got to know what you're winning for.
Now, here's another kind of discrepancy that I find today, though, Milt. Now, back in our day, you know, and I'm a little bit older than you are. My birthday is February 4th instead of February the 7th. But I'm a little, just got a couple years on you. But back in our day, we had the proper amateur programs. We had the PA. We had the Golden Gloves and whatnot. But nowadays, I find, you know, and I'm out here on the West Coast, and it really kind of blew my mind. I found out, you know, that you might find a lot of boxing programs in the barrio and like that, but you don't find a lot of boxing programs in the inner city like we used to have.
Right, that's true. I mean, it's like anything else. Everything you take, basketball will change. So football has changed. You know, it's just boxing changed. Everything is sort of different, like, you know, now. I know it's like 10 or 20 years later, but it's just totally different now. Different rules now.
Now, another great point, I mean, you kind of lead me into questions that I want to ask. I don't even have to pull teeth here. No. Can you tell me some of the training now, you know, as a coach now, and then being coached by someone like Emmanuel Stewart, how big a change?
Okay, I'm thinking back to my training camp when I was with Bob Sercon and all them guys. When we came home, it was, they taught totally, it was like different. He taught different from what Emmanuel was taught. And my papa way of throwing a hook, he changed my way. I tried to do it the USA way. He said, no, stay back with the old way. Don't change. Something was different. You know, I believe everybody teaches different. That's why everybody got a different name. Everybody teaches different.
Okay. I do understand that now. Another big change that I've found in today's fighters, you know, now, remembering back during your time, you know, we had an American presence in almost every weight class. The Easterns, the Russians and the Ukrainians and all those, and the Cubans, they ruled the amateur ranks. But when it came to pros, Americans ruled. What do you see now when you see, what do you think now when you see a lot of these champions coming from the Eastern Bloc countries, you know, countries that we used to say were, you know, amateur factories?
Well, the biggest factor that they're, the Europeans and, you know, Latin countries, where their kids are still fighting a lot of amateur fights. You know, they're not fighting one or two amateur fights to turn pro. They're fighting... They're getting really skilled from the amateurs. And that program, the amateur program, is a big factor. And that's what I believe. You know, it may always love the amateur, and I love the amateur. I had a great time in amateur. I thought I got a lot of bad decisions, but I still like the amateurs.
Well, you didn't have too many bad decisions as an amateur.
I lost 15 fights. 10 of you take off the book.
and two of the fighters you lost, I mean, you know, losing the Olympic trials to Johnny Bumpus, you know, I mean, I'm not a professional fighter.
I thought I beat Bumpus, Lemuel Stevens, I thought I beat all them guys back then. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I mean, but you know, like you may say, when I went to Japan, I had to go way over there to win. I can't win in the United States. You feel what I'm saying?
I'm going to kind of kick at you a little bit here because you did some things that a lot of boxers and black men haven't done. Now, not just that. See, but you know, I'm looking at some of the places that you fought here. You know, 1985, you fought in Paris, and you fought
right.
in Monte Carlo. Now, there's not
right.
a lot of champions, black men or any other, that can say that they fought in Paris and Monte Carlo in 1985.
True that. That's true.
You know, so I mean, you are very, very accomplished, and I understand that as a fighter, you know, no one wants to see those losses or that draw on your record, but I would say that you handled yourself very well out there in the sporting world, my man.
I mean, because winning the professional world title, that erased everything. All, you know, everything is erased because you are the champion. You know, what do you got to talk about? Yeah, I still got beef about the past, but nobody wants to hear that. Like what you said, but you was a good champion, but I still got some beef.
That's what made you a champion. The fact that you probably had
that's true.
And I mean, you know, like I said, you know, because I am my age, you know, I mean, some of the youngsters that are listening might not know exactly what I'm talking about, but you know, you fought in Cobo Hall, you know, I mean, that's the equivalent of Madison Square Garden in Detroit.
Oh yeah, I mean, I didn't look at it like that back then because you know, the Joe Louis was the big thing. I never fought in Joe Louis.
Yeah,
I mean, the man, Tommy took pictures before it was being built about the premier stars. I never fought in Joe Louis. I never fought in Madison Square Garden. You know.
No, but you fought in the Dunes, you fought in Trump Plaza, you fought out in the Showboat. I mean, you know, at those times, you know, those were the big venues. Like I said, I mean, there was at no time that you didn't equate yourself well. Tell me a little bit about, you know, I remember your nickname when you were fighting. But can you want to tell us a little bit maybe about how you got that nickname? The Iceman,
because I was colder than Jim. I try to win rounds in the gym. I practice to win rounds in the gym. People don't do that. The people overlook that, think that's nothing. But I thought it was a big problem to my game was I was doing rounds in the amateur. I mean in the gym and practice. Like the great Albert Iverson said, practice. I want to run rounds and practice. And I want to be ahead. I want to be ahead of everybody. I want to stay ahead. I don't want to lose in practice, personally. you know, the people look at it differently, but to me, you get whooped you get whooped and you're not, and you're just happy to be content with what you're doing. I'm not. I want to win. I want to be saying that. I feel like I'm winning.
Yeah, we all know that the Kronk Wars, the Kronk Gym Wars were legendary. I mean, you know, winning as you say, at practice was sometimes harder than it was winning on
Friday
night.
Right.
You know, tell me what it meant to you to become the first Detroit-born
Kronk
champion.
Well, I mean, now that, you know, as life keeps going, and I look at it, I think about the Joe Louis and all that stuff, you know, and Tommy Helmer. But, yeah, I am the first Detroit born world champion. I know, because, you know, Joe Louis was from Alabama. Tommy Helmer's from Texas and born in Texas. I ain't saying they're from, but born. And Tommy was born in Tennessee. And me, I'm the first Detroit born world champion. It took me, myself has looked that up. It's like, oh, I am the first Detroit born world champion. Well, but hopefully we got some more coming.
we're going to talk a little bit about that too. Another thing that I noticed about you now, you made sure that you went out on a winning note. You won your last two fights, and
right.
You walked out the ring. Now, you know, we just saw last night, you know, James Toney lose, you know, his fight.
I know he was fighting. I know he lost. Okay.
Yeah, he lost his last fight last night.
Did he look good?
No,
he looked
like a you know, for want of a better term, an old man. You know, this was definitely one of those fights.
Your birthday is his birthday is the end.
Right, right. I understand, you know, that competitive nature in every fighter and whatnot. But at what point does it get to be? I mean, you know, when you walk out of that ring and you know it's your last time and you're successful, what does that mean to you? Rather than walking out there knowing that your last fight has been unsuccessful. I mean,
I think your last fight.
Just to put a note on it for the fans, you walked out of the ring, your last fight, and you knocked your opponent out in the first round. It wasn't like you went through, you know, back in those days, a whole 15-round fight, you know, guy cut you up. You knocked this guy out in the first round and walked away. You know, how satisfying
right.
was it?
That's satisfying. You know, to me, it's like how I started my career. My first five fights was the first round knockout. I believe if you're not on my level, why should I stick around with scars on my face, just jump around the ring? Let's just get this over with. I can see that from a person with skills and not skills. It don't take me long to catch on. Like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. And that's what I'm trying to teach for my kids now at Kronk.
Yeah, now let's talk about, you know, your kids at Kronk and you know what it means to you, or what did it mean to you to know that you were going to be the man at Kronk?
Well, I didn't know I was going to be the man, but it's just the idea of just giving back to Emmanuel Stewart for what he had done for me and for so many of us in our lives, you know. Boxing was not my first love, and I got into boxing, and I fell in love with the idea of how Emmanuel Stewart, you know, the way he taught us and treated us, and just the whole nine yards. And I liked the whole game, and I wasn't even a boxing fan. That's the funny part about it. I wound up becoming a world champion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you say, you know, it's funny that, you know, the way that life takes us sometimes. But tell us about some of your young guys.
We did see Mr. Harrison suffering an unfortunate loss, but tell us about some of the guys you have coming up and what can we expect to see from Crown Jim?
Well, I'm not gonna put names out there because I wanna jinx somebody, but I got a couple of prospects coming up, and I think it's gonna be on that. I'm trying to put them back on the same style that we was on, but it's gonna be hard. But I think I'm doing it. I mean, these kids have already been in the gym for like 2 or 3 months now, so they can learn how to fight. And then we had good coaches that grew up. That makes a big difference. We had good coaches. We had coaches. Our coaches are ex-fighters, so all these trainers that get, they have the time to volunteer, but we got ex-fighters that know the game. So that's the difference.
Can we get the names of some of your coaching staff?
Yeah, we got Antoine Bell, we got Darnell Fields, we got a couple of more. I know y'all look for all champions. I'm the only champion at this crunch gym, but Jimmy Park got his own gym. And, a couple of more trending up, yeah.
Now, where is the gym located now? Did you move the gym, or is it in the same spot?
No, it's in a different spot. It's still on the west side, but it's in a different location on the west side. It's on West Chicago and West in Manitow. So it's inside a church. It's in the basement of a church.
Okay. Now, we all know you. I mean, hey, Clark has never been one of those big flashy spots, or that in itself, just going back, to when you say it's in the church, it kind of takes Clark back to its roots, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. But now, do you are any of your fighters going to be signed to possibly do some of this PBC series work that we're seeing being put on by Mr. Al Heyman?
Far as the one, you talking about the one that I never, the man is just amateurs. There's nobody ready for the pros yet. So,
okay.
Excuse me, I'm grooming, it's not ready. Like I say, I want to see them with amateur fights before they turn pro. Everybody that's with Mel McCoy and come out of crunk in this millennium now, they're going to have amateur fights. They're going to have more than 4 or 5, too.
Now, are you going to be working with the Michigan Golden Gloves or any of those organizations?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, I'm for the whole nine. Yeah, I'm from everything. I'm for everything that's out there. I'm trying to put a crunk fighter into everything.
Coming from Detroit and the great gym, the great tradition of the gym, we could expect nothing less. Tell us, more or less, what do you have coming up in this next year? What do you see? What do you see in, what's your vision for Kronk?
Well, I think I got a whole bunch of kids that never had fights. That's a big thing. This is gonna be like starting from scratch. I mean. Even though, like, when I came to Crunk, Crunk already had a team before I got there, now this is a rebuild of a whole new generation of kids with no fight. So this is like day one, a renewal of a new day, you know what I'm saying? Nobody had a fight. But I got a couple of kids in the gym that the things that I'm showing them about boxing, they understand and they catching on. I think we'll have a few good Crunk fighters that's going to ring some bells out here.
Okay, and now, like you said, you intend to put a lot of emphasis on your amateur program out there now.
Right.
Is boxing returning to the hood?
Well, I can't really say that because, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's like anything else. You know, you have good games, you have bad games. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to try to get it back. I'm just going to try to get the name Punk back out here first in Detroit. Then in Detroit, then I'm going to blossom all over the world. I just want everybody to come 100, that's all.
Now, you know, I mean, hey, the kids have you provide an excellent role model for the kids. I mean, you know, you have the not only the resume to show them. I mean, you know, but they can go on YouTube, look at your fights. Tell me, you know, what is the feeling that you get, you know, when these young men come to you asking you to shape their future?
My thing is, you know, I look at them and I say, do they really want this? Do they believe in this? You know, what a lot of these kids now learning, the boxing is more than what they think was called. I got a lot of, like, ex-basketball. I mean, I got a lot of basketball players, football players, guys that, you know, hockey, you know, guys that play different sports, and they're trying to, and they realize that boxing is totally different because it's an individual sport. There's no timeout. Somebody can substitute for you, you know, and all that. So they learn it. Them 3 minutes is long rounds, you know. They learn to do something in 3 minutes is long.
Well, you know, as the old man and, you know, my mentor and yours used to say, you can't play boxing.
No, you can't play that. You're right about that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the very first things that Emmanuel ever said to me is, you cannot play boxing. This is real. Yeah. But, Milt, my man, it was very good to have you on the show. Good to find out where Kronk is going. And, you know, a lot of times we, you know, I have, excuse me, some of the older generation guys in, and we'd love to have you back. Talking boxing with us.
Yeah, that's good. Our writing field do a lot of talking on the show. Right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we've Kevin Kelly's been on the show. Of course, you know, Ronnie Shields, I'm sure you're aware of him. Ronnie's usually on the show every Sunday. You know, a lot of you guys came up through the amateurs together or, you know, the ring and whatnot. So it's always glad to hear from what I call the old heads, you know, which is kind of ironic. Like I said, you know, I'm just a few years removed from you. But, you know, hey, man, it was a pleasure watching you in the ring. It's a pleasure talking to you today. And I feel honored to have you on the show. And we look forward to having you back sometime in the near future.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, well, thank you very much, my man, and we appreciate your time tonight. You have a great night.
Until John Spree, I said thank
you. No problem, Mel. I'll be in touch with him later, and I would definitely pass on your well wishes. Thank you. Have a great
night. Okay, thank you.
Well, that was Mr. Milt McCoy. Kronk champion from 1983 to 1985. For those of you that remembered, he was the next champ after Sugar Ray Leonard retired. So, hey, kudos to Mr. Mel McCroy. Hope he can get Kronk Jim back on track. As he said, we'll start with amateurs again. And, hey, we look forward to hearing big things from anyone Kronk. But right now, we are should be joined any moment now by my MMA expert, of course, Mr. Kalani Lua. Kalani does our Wednesday basketball show, and he's also part of the Sports Crib, our regular Thursday night broadcast. So Kalani should be here any moment. We're going to talk a little Ronda Rousey. We're going to talk some Floyd Mayweather. See if I believe we have. I thought he was here. Here he is, Mr. Kalani Lua. Kalani, how are we doing today, my man?
James, doing pretty good. It's Sunday, fun day, weekend coming to a close, which is sad, but glad to be back on the air with you, talking some sports, my man.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, I thought you were the perfect person for me to call in, to have called in tonight. We've had a lot of conversation about some of the latest things on MMA. And who else better for me to talk about than the man that lives right there in Las Vegas and observes all things MMA. So, first of all, let's talk a little bit about Miss Ronda Rousey, another 34-second fight. I believe we've watched her for a whole total of, what, 148 seconds in four fights?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
So tell us why Ronda Rousey is the most dominating woman in MMA right now.
Well, James, I got to tell you, you know, with Ronda Rousey, her story is very unique. For those that don't know, who haven't ever watched her fight or any of the behind-the-scenes stories, her mom is a world-class and world champion judo practitioner. She won world championships in the 80s in the female competition. So when Ronda was young, at about 10 or 11, she started practicing judo under her mom's tutelage, and at that young age, with a high pedigree teacher teaching on a constant basis, she really was able to pick up that type of sport early on. She went on ahead, represent her country in the Olympics. She brought home a bronze medal, but still in all, she had the Olympic pedigree for judo. And for those who may not understand, for females, unlike the men, the female judo world is actually more competitive and have more practitioners around the world than, let's say, women's boxing or women's wrestling or anything of that nature. So she really was able, in order for her to get a bronze medal, she really was taking on high-caliber female athletes during that time. She's been able to take that same discipline, that same model into the MMA cage, and she's been wonderful so far. You got an interesting stat here I'm about to pull up, but in her short career so far, Ronda Rousey is 12 professional fights. She has spent a total of 25 minutes and 36 seconds in the cage. 9 of her 12 wins come with first round submission victories. Her main submission is an arm bar. She uses a judo hip throw, get the female on the ground, and she goes for an arm bar. What she's really been practicing on ever since she stepped into the UFC is her stand-up striking, working on her boxing with her coach down there in Glendale, California. Glendale Boxing Club down there in Southern California. And she's really improved her striking. And she decided to say, hey, this woman, Beth Carrera, that I'm about to fight, she wanted to speak on me in a personal matter. So she goes to go to Brazil, defend her title. Fight, even though it was real quick, you could see Beth was looking for her to try to use her judo to get a throw on her. When that didn't happen, Ronda just stood up and said, nope, I'm going to just embarrass you, and she dominated on the feet. Ronda, unfortunately, James, is kind of like some of the top athletes we see in the NBA right now. She's just ahead of her time. She's 5, 10, possibly even 15 years ahead of when the rest of the competition is catching up to her because she started training at such a high-level sport at such a young age. For most women in MMA now, they're picking it up in their early or mid-20s, possibly early 30s, where Ronda's been doing this ever since she was a kid. So that's what makes her so far ahead of the curve when it comes to women's MMA.
You know, I mean, everybody talks a lot about her skills, but let's talk a little bit about her personality. Ronda also she tends to make herself accessible. And not only accessible, but, you know, I mean, she tends to kind of, in a humorous way, she humanizes herself. I mean, you know, you hear, you can see some of the stories, you know, with the kids that jump in the ring and how she embraces them.
you see, you know, some of the things that she says that may not necessarily, even though they may be politically correct, they still have a certain little edge to them. Like, you know, some of the things she says about Floyd, the little banter that they have back and forth. She goes on some rather infamous social media sites, for instance. I mean, the woman just seems to have that correct personality to where she kind of fits into everyone's situation. And even though she's an athlete, she's still human. And she's pretty.
Yeah, that doesn't help her for that. She's also a good look as well. That doesn't hurt at all. Now, James, you know, one of the unique things about Ronda, like you were bringing up, is that she's able to fit into a lot of different situations because she, in a sense, embodies what a lot of us as people not only want from ourselves, but we want from our athletes, entertainers, and celebrities, is the fact that she keeps it pretty much real 100% of the time. She doesn't go out there and try to say things and then try to recant or re. Sometimes that brings her a little bit of heat. When she had her rivalry with Misha Tate, and after she beat Misha, Misha went to shake her hand. It's not a sportsmanship. Ronda said, no, you know, I'm not shaking your hand. We don't like each other. I don't like you. I'm not shaking your hand. People booed her. She got some heat for that. But at the same time, that also got her fans because people see that, no, this girl isn't just putting on a show. She isn't out there pretending whether she likes someone or not. No, she is being completely honest, true to herself, and she opens herself up to the public, as you said. When she does an open workout and the young lady ran up to her to give her a hug, you know, that was real human emotion, but she was excited to see the fans. I think one of the interesting concepts of why Ronda is the way that she is because she's a female that didn't grow up being the star athlete. And what I mean by that, you know, if you're a male and you're a boxer or you're a football player, basketball player, whatever your sport is, a lot of times people give you extra attention. Oh, yeah, you know, the girls' basketball team is cool, but we can't wait for the men's varsity to come out. Oh, yeah, it's cool to watch the softball game, but you know what? When the men's football game comes on, that's where everybody goes to. So, obviously, men's sports are a bit more entertaining, and I think because she grew up in a sport, which is judo, that doesn't get a lot of attention, she really wasn't growing up feeling a sense of entitlement of, I deserve all this attention, this is all me. This is all very new to her. She said in several interviews, you know, she's just riding the waves, going with the flow, being who she is, and she enjoys the ride because she never expected in a million years that she would ever reach this status. As you said, it's hard for her to meet men, so she decides to try some other dating sites to try to see if she can find somebody who's willing to accept a woman who is fit, who is physically fit, who is a bit of an alpha male, who does have a loud personality. One of her favorite things to say now is a DMB, a do-nothing female dog. You guys can fill in the B part. And that's because she feels like, hey, just like any other athlete, build my body so that every muscle can be used for a purpose. And I'm not ashamed to hide it. I'm not ashamed to say, oh, this is not how I look. No, I embrace how I look. I embrace what I do, and I love it. And, you know, it's no different than Serena Williams, Lolo Jones, or anybody else out there. She is really changing how female sports are being looked at, especially female fighters, and how it's being looked at. And she really is the perfect front runner, or the face, rather, for that third to be happening. And she's doing it on the biggest stage in the sport of professional mixed martial arts, which is the UFC. So that helps as well.
Now, there's a couple conflicting headlines here. The first one was that Cyborg says she wants to fight Rousey in April. Now, there's also a rumor that she's willing to fight Rousey at 135 pounds on December 5th. Now, Ronda has made no bones about how she feels about Cyborg, referring to the juice remarks and all that, you know. Do you see this fight happening?
You know what, this is the Manny Pacquiao-Floyd Mayweather fight for women's MMA. For those that don't know, Christina Cyborg Santos, a Brazilian female mixed martial artist. She's not in the UFC right now. She's a 145-pound champion. She's been undefeated for 10 years with 12 knockouts in her career. She is as dominant as a female champion outside of Ronda Rousey that there has been in the sport. She did fail a steroid test about 5 years back. She served her suspension, and that's where Ronda kind of picked up her name, because she was one of the first females to really speak out about it, even though they were in different weight classes. Ronda obviously going to the UFC and succeeding to be the star that she is, and then Cyborg is like, hey, her division, which is 145, is not in the UFC, so she hasn't been able to make her way there. They've been trying to make this super fight happen now for the past couple of years. The big problem was, can Cyborg, being 145, can she cut the weight to get down to 135? For those that don't know, it sounds like, hey, that's only 10 pounds. It's not a lot. But for a fighter, sometimes your body just shuts down when you're trying to cut X amount of weight. That's why you don't see a good example was Oscar De La Hoya when he fought Manny Pacquiao. He fought Floyd at 154, and he was okay. But when he tried to fight Pacquiao at 147, he was dehydrated. He was out of it. He looked like a shell of his own self, and Manny wiped the floor with him. Well, that's the same thing with the mixed martial arts. So that's been the big problem. Can Cyborg get down to 135? For the past 2 years, she's been working with a nutritionist and a personal trainer to really try to get her body right to make the proper cut. The UFC is trying to have a big fight card in December. There is a rumor that it might be at AT&T Stadium. Who better to put on the card, if not in the main event, at least in the co-main event, than your biggest star, Ronda Rousey? This is a fight that really does need to happen. It's a fight that fight fans want to see, James, but unfortunately, you know, Ronda's very hell-bent on Cyborg has to fight at 135. She won't do a catchweight at 140 or at 145. It has to be at 135. If Cyborg could really make the weight, I know she's putting it out there that she's willing to do it. If she could really make the weight and not be dehydrated, I got to tell you, James, that's going to be a fight that is going to be huge in the sport of mixed martial arts, especially for women's MMA. And it hasn't even been around that long, but it's still that big of a fight because these are the two best women mixed martial artists in the entire world.
Well, you know, I don't know how they translate over mixed martial arts and boxing, but usually when a fighter has to lose 10 pounds to make weight, it doesn't bode very well. Now, fighters coming up.
Exactly.
Fighters coming up tend to fare a little better, you know, but hey, but. There was some more action, though, at, I believe, what was it, UFC Fight Night in Nashville. You want to give us a quick recap of that?
Yeah, sure. UFC this past Saturday just had UFC Fight Night 73. It was on Fox Sports 1 for those who have the channel. It was in Knoxville, Tennessee. The main event saw number 4 ranked light heavyweight Glover Teixeira, who did fight last year, John Bones Jones, for the light heavyweight championship. He came up short, obviously, but he was in action. He was taking on number 6 and former Tennessee Volunteer football player Ovik St. Preux. It was the main event. These two guys were it really was a pretty good matchup. Both of these men are stand-up guys, OSP as they call them. You know, he's a former football player, so his background isn't as extensive as most of the fighters, but he's really established himself as a strong, fierce striker. He's got knockout power. He has a little bit of unorthodox way of going about it with his stance and how he moves. And with his knockout power, it really makes him a tough matchup for fighters. Glover Teixeira, who before he lost to John Jones, was on a 20-fight win streak, including 3 matches in the UFC. So he's got a world of experience. He's got a background in boxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So in this fight, they were slugging it out, but Teixeira, being a veteran, was able to get some takedowns. He got 6 out of 8 takedown attempts on OSP, worked the ground and pound, really was able to beat him into submission. OSP, you know, he's a very good stand-up fighter, but really does need to work on his ground game. And Glover Teixeira in the 3rd round was able to go ahead and get in a rear naked choke, got the submission victory win, and then afterwards he did the main thing that any fighter, whether it's boxing or MMA, should do. They asked him what's next. He called out the champion, Daniel Cormier, and he said, hey, DC, you're the man. I don't know how many more fights I need, but you're the one I'm coming after, brother. So that's definitely what he should have been doing, is self-promoting himself. So OSP, back to the drawing board, but he should bounce back relatively quick because he is a very good young prospect. And then Glover Teixeira, even though he's 33, he still has a lot of gas left in the tank. Very entertaining fight. There was a couple of nice undercard fights. Amanda Nunes, who was number 7 ranked in the women's bantamweight division, that's the 135-pound division, led by Ronda Rousey, obviously. She got a very, very impressive first-round submission victory over former Olympic silver medalist in wrestling, Sarah McMahon. And Amanda Nunes has now put her name in the hat for possible Ronda Rousey opponents in the future. Ronda has beaten so far 6 of the top 10 UFC women in her division, so she started to run out of opponents. Amanda Nunes, a Brazilian stand-up striker, really working on her wrestling now that she's training an American top team in Florida. She's really showing that, hey, if given a chance, she might be someone who could give Ronda a little bit of problems in the stand-up department, because Ronda's still improving on that, but Nunes is a stand-up striker. So with her impressive victory, if this cyborg match doesn't happen, there are 3 names to look out for Ronda Rousey's future opponent: Misha Tate, Cyborg, and Amanda Nunes. So she's definitely someone to watch out on the rise coming up. And as always, you know, UFC Fight Night was entertaining with some young, up-and-coming prospects, so that's always fun. So as I say, you guys get a chance, check out the Fox Sports 1 card, because there's always some pretty good entertaining fights on there when the UFC is in town.
Yeah, Fox Sports 1 seems to be making themselves into the combat sports channel. They've also decided that they were going to extend their series with the PBC series. So you're going to have a lot of UFC and mainline boxing on Fox Sports 1. But before we talk about some of the upcoming things, let's talk a little bit about a couple programs that I happen to catch on HBO, HBO Sports with Brian Gummel. And they talked about, one had the interview with the young lady that War Machine assaulted. And the latest one, they were talking to one of the young he's part of the family that founded what is now what we call the UFC. And I'm talking about the domestic violence issue here. Now, one of the most surprising statistics that I learned right at the beginning of the show is when they compared the national average, I believe, they used the national average as 350, or was it? I believe it was 300. And then they showed the NFL was below the national average with, I believe it was 210. The number was 210. And the third number they showed was the UFC, which had like 750. Which is 3 times the amount of the National Football League, but the National Football League does get a lot more scrutiny. Another thing let's take it one part at a time. What did you think of just that particular statistic when you compare the national average being 1/3 that of the amount of athletes involved in MMA?
Well, you know, first, James, and hearing that statistic obviously is startling, you know, for all of us. We all have a mother, whether she's still with you or not. We all have a mother. Most of us have sisters, aunts, or female cousins, wives, daughters. So when you hear a statistic like that, it really does shake you to the core to know that there's that many men out there abusing women. So that's very hard to accept. But in looking at it from a sports aspect, you could look at it glasses half full, half empty kind of way. You could look at it as, well, okay, they got that, but the NFL has over 1,600 players in it. So their average is they have a lot more players, and then when you only get 210, that's a low number when you compare it to 1,600. You still have 1,400 that isn't doing that. We're in the UFC alone, they have over 500 athletes. So if the UFC only has 500 and you take 210 of their athletes, their percentage obviously is going to be a lot higher because that's closer to 50%. So that's one reason that their numbers maybe look a little bit worse than how maybe the NBA, baseball, or even football, who gets a lot of puff for it, is because they don't have as many athletes there as the other sports do. Now, that's not making an excuse. That is not in no way saying, hey, it's okay. I'm just putting out simple facts here. But another thing is, and I hate to go this route, it's not defending these guys or nothing, but at the same time, a lot of these guys who get into fighting, especially, consider that the MMA, the UFC has only been around since 1993. It's only been around for 22 years. It has not been around for close to 100 years like the NFL, 50-plus years like basketball, 100 years like baseball. It doesn't have that long lineage of people growing up in that. It started 20 years ago to where guys literally were just known for fighting on the streets, in a dojo, whatever, and said, hey, you want to get inside of an arena, inside of a cage, and fight another man, bare knuckle, and go that route. So it's still growing in the mindset of, okay, this is a martial art. This isn't just guys going out there and doing human cockfighting. So you still got a lot of knuckleheads who get into the sport and think, yeah, I'm a tough guy. I like to punch people in the face. They get into the sport. They learn some tricks, and then they don't know how to control their anger. They don't know how to control their behavior when they're outside of the cage. And unfortunately, there are times where, a woman is on the other end of the stick where, she's obviously being abused. That is no way saying that it's acceptable, but you're taking these guys who literally are learning how to fight for a living, and then in normal society, they're not doing the right things that they need to be doing, because the responsibility is on them to get either the proper help or to take the proper classes or to put the right people around them to where they're not getting into those situations. So it's very unfortunate. That number is very alarming. I do know that because MMA is such a young sport, they still are trying to find ways to build in programs within the UFC. And then also, when you got a guy like War Machine who did what he did to his girlfriend, and obviously that really brought a lot of attention to this, mixed martial arts as a whole, especially just in the United States, there are a lot of minor league organizations. I mean, I'm here in Las Vegas. There are literally 3 to 4 other organizations that put fights on here in Vegas on a monthly basis that's not associated with the UFC. So when you take that many fighters all around this nation, when they get into trouble and you hear, oh, it's MMA fighter, the first thing you think of is, oh, like a UFC type of guy. So they get associated with that. So it's unfortunate. I really do hope that they find a way to get this stuff under control, not just in sports, but just general. Men really do need to get themselves together and know that it's never okay to ever put your hands on a woman. Unless literally you are trying to save someone's life or your own, it is never okay for you to put your hands on a woman. So it's a lesson that us men, regardless of what we do for a profession, have to learn and have to learn how to police up amongst each other, because that is in no way, shape, or form acceptable.
Now, great point. And it almost sounds like you said the same exact words that we saw the head of the UFC himself say. I believe the exact quote was, the UFC has zero tolerance for violence against women. But yet when we see what's a matter of public record, we see a lot of UFC fighters with multiple domestic violence issues, and a lot of these guys are still fighting. Are we putting our money where our mouth is here, or is this just lip service?
It's a little bit of both, James. I'm going to lie there. There are guys in there. As I said, when this War Machine happened, I want to say, a year, maybe 2 years ago, it really opened up the nation's eyes to what a trained fighter could do to another human being, especially a female. So there were plenty of guys in the UFC who had backgrounds in this. One of the things is, and I don't work for the UFC, I'm not associated with them, so I don't know what they do, but now they really do a lot more background service into it. I do know some young amateur fighters who are trying to make it to the UFC, and they, and I asked them, what are the behind the scenes things maybe we don't see as fans that make it hard for young guys to get into there? And one of the things that one of the guys told me as recently as last week is that they do extensive background checks now because of what's going on with the domestic violence. Before, it was almost like the NFL, like, okay, well, we'll give you a second chance. Okay, it was 5 years ago, you got dismissed out of court. Okay, we'll bring you along and whatnot. They just had recently had another fighter. I'm not going to name his name because, I don't want to get in trouble speaking. You know what? Bump it. We're on the show. Anthony Romo-Johnson, who just fought for the light heavyweight championship over the summer. He had a prior 2010 domestic violence case. It was settled out of court. But when this whole thing came up, the UFC initially released him because they didn't want to hear the backfire of it. Once his court stuff got settled and the case was dropped, there were no more files charged against him. The UFC brought him back on board to be a part of their roster. So, you know, it's one of those slippery slopes things, you know. When it's too soon. If a guy served his time, should he not have another chance to fight? If it was dismissed out of court, should we not bring him along anymore? You know, it's one of those gray areas where it's really hard to say, well, where do we go from here? Because you look at a sport like the NFL, they let guys come in all the time with prior records and other shady backgrounds. So what do we do as a sport? It's one of those things, you know, I really wish I had a better answer for you, James, but I do know that the UFC specifically is really trying to do a better background check on future fighters that they bring into the sport. And if you do have a lot of red flags, such as domestic violence on there, I think they're pretty much going to try to stay away from you.
Now, another thing, you know, that I just want to kind of touch on right quick here. Now, being former military background, combat training and whatnot, we know how to use a rear naked choke in a much more lethal way. We know the effects. We've been taught the effects. Now, when you do this for a living professionally, you know, and I don't mean as a soldier, I mean, shouldn't you by common sense, I mean, you know that this is a debilitating hold. That's what it's used for. It's used as part of lethal force. Should we really be teaching this to young men that have no control of their anger?
That's a very valid point, James. Just like you being a veteran, learning the combat sports and how to use obviously certain holds to, like you said, a much higher degree as far as lethal. But, I mean, if a fighter started training at 16 years old and then at 24 years old he has anger issues, do we say, well, why did we teach him? Well, you know, 6 years, 8 years ago, we didn't know he would turn out to have all these anger issues. You know, if a guy fights at 20, and at 31 years old, he has a domestic case where he chokes somebody out, and we say, well, you know, why is he learning all this? Well, he's been learning for 11 years. You know, it's one of those things to where, yeah, you want to say, you know, is there a way for us to teach these young people who are coming into the sport trying to learn how to fight and do jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or kickboxing? Maybe is there a way for us to scan it? Yes, but then how many gyms across the nation are really going to put that much time? Money is the big thing, and effort in the saying, every single kid we come in here, we have to do a psych eval to make sure that you don't have anger problems. It's one of those things to where, you know, if I teach my son how to shoot a gun at 6 years old because I want him to know how to hunt, so when we go on camping trips, me and him could go maybe, I don't know, shoot at birds or whatever the case may be, you know, nothing that'll get me in trouble by PETA. How am I supposed to know that at 22 years old he's going to go on top of a building and just start plucking off people because I taught him something almost 20 years ago? So it's just one of those things where it's very tough to say, where do you draw the line? Maybe if a guy does have a domestic dispute, maybe right there, if you cut him off, suspend him from training, which obviously would be almost impossible to do because you could do stuff at your house. But maybe you put them in, you know, if they're with an organization, maybe you put them in automatic anger management classes, domestic violence classes. You put them in classes, community service, where they learn this type of stuff. And, James, just like, you know, I'm pretty sure just like in your day, no matter what, there's always going to be a few bad apples that ruin it for everybody else. You learn some new things, you go into town, have a few drinks, and now you're thinking John Rambo or Chuck Norris, and you want to try to prove yourself. And what do? You go to what you learn. So it's unfortunate that we got people like that. But, you know, if we try to police it up, literally we're probably going to have to do the same thing. We're almost going with football, water it down to the point to where in a couple of years or 10, 20 years, we may not have football or mixed martial arts around anymore because we're trying so hard to stop violent outbursts from happening outside of the cage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a slippery slope when you're trying to balance entertainment, sport, you know, and business, you know. So mm-hmm. In some ways, you know, we're still that same Roman gladiator crowd, you know, that was thrilled, you know, by Caligula and whatnot. But yet and still, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, hey, we want you to kill somebody, but we don't want to see the blood. You know, I mean,
exactly.
You know, so, you know, I mean, hey, my man, you know, it's good to have you back. You know, missed you these last weeks. Why don't you give us your final thoughts, man? And, hey, look forward to having you back on the show this week.
Definitely. It's good to be back. Thank you guys for holding it down. I have some personal issues I have to deal with, but I am back. I can't wait to start the show during the week. My final thought is going to be just for the fact that football season is here. Finally, 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 every Sunday we are going to have football for the next several months. I am ecstatic. I just got to say, enjoy these players for what they are. We just had the Hall of Fame this past weekend. And obviously, you know, guys like Tim Brown, Charles Haley, Bill Polian, and Junior Seau going in. Enjoy these guys for what they are because they put their bodies through a lot. One of the greatest things, but also one of the saddest things, is when they show the Hall of Fame and you get to see some of these older players and how difficult it is for them to stand straight up, how to walk a straight line, how to get downstairs. Obviously, with age, all of us, you know, our bodies change. But with the pounding that these guys put their bodies through, you can just see that it takes a serious toll on their bodies. So appreciate these players for what they're doing out there. Support your local teams or wherever you root for. And I got to say, I am glad football is back. We're going to get into a lot of it. I can't wait to talk about future fights. And, hey, next month, Money Mayweather might be his last fight. Unfortunately, I won't be able to see it live, but it'll be fun to see it. Can't wait to talk more about it. James, thanks for having me on, my man. I can't wait to talk to you more during the week.
All right, my man, you have a great night, and we will talk Wednesday or Thursday, maybe both. So you have a good one.
Sounds good, James. You too.
All right. Well, everyone, that was a great show tonight. We had Iron Man Scully, also Milt McCroy, talking about the reopening of the amateur program at Kronk Gym in Detroit. So hey, we appreciate the fans. Talked a little mixed martial arts with everyone, a little Ronda Rousey, a little domestic violence, some of the domestic violence issues. And, hey, we look forward to talking to one of the boxing's most famous judges, Mr. Tommy Kazmarek, will be on the show Tuesday. Also, a young prospect, soon to be fighting for a title, Mr. Oscar Antonio Orozco. Right out here in San Diego. So have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you next week on the Weekend Wrap.